I think I'm live. Give me a second to just take a look at this because this is the first time trying to stream to PeerTube. And it looks like it's going, but it might not. So let's see here. No, it looks like it's going. So if you go to techlore.tv, you can actually watch this live stream on YouTube right now, or PeerTube. But it looks like it's working on both ends. If you guys could let me know how I sound, if my video sounds good, audio, that'd be really appreciated. Because I'm using different software and I'm using two different things here. Let's see. Hello, we got Joshi, we got Practical IT with Jeremy Like, we got Oddbite. How you guys doing? Cool, thank you. There's not many people. This is a very different time. It's too early for me. My voice hasn't even woken up yet. let me turn up my gain. Test. Hopefully it's a little better. Test. Cool. So yeah, just to kind of prep everyone for what it's going to look like today, we have the main win that I was really excited about this week, because this is something that I think every 6 months I have a whole spiel about it, and it's probably been more than 6 months, and it's time for the spiel of actually supporting and being a part of the projects that make pretty much this whole journey possible. The whole digital rights, privacy, and security journey. There's some very critical core services that do so much of the work for you and make this so much easier and accessible. And without our support to them, they probably wouldn't exist, or if they do, not to the extent that they do. And I'm gonna give a lot more context and really dive into it pretty shortly here. But we have a lot of other fun wins. This is from the last couple weeks, because I missed last week. So yeah, today I expect to be a little off, because it's been a couple weeks, and also it's Saturday instead of Friday, and we're recording at a totally different time. So I want to thank everybody who's probably on, who's not normally on, and at least we're going to get a different demographic today. But yeah, let's say hi in the chat. If you're online, I'd love to kind of say hi and get things started. And again, I'm sorry, I'm a little quiet. Let's see. I'm trying to get used to this software too, because everything's in a different place now. Let's see. So we've got Joshi, Practical IT, you got my last name right? Not many do. Jeremy, man, I actually forgot the first time I said it. Like, is it like? Hey, Corso. Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, if anyone else is here, I see there's like 30 people on the YouTube side of things, so say hi. I don't see anyone on PeerTube, which is a little sad given how much people have requested that. So I hope more people join on the PeerTube side eventually. But I see one viewer on PeerTube. And that's honestly been a pattern. I feel like on the internet, feedback is the same. Like someone says, I want this, and someone else says, I want this. And to me, it's like, oh, a lot of people want this. And I'd say 80% of the times, if I hear a request a lot, it's because people want it. But sometimes that's just not the case. Sometimes a few people like really, really request something and make me feel like it's heavily requested, and then you do it and you realize, actually, no one wants this. So I don't think it's PeerTube. I'm gonna keep doing the PeerTube thing because I'm gonna make you guys start using it eventually. But I think this is a good example of that. Hello, Corsa. Hello, Rav Kahlo, B. And you've talked with all three of us. Yes. All right, I think I've been on enough. We already have some viewers here. Let's go ahead and dive into the wins. And let's not delay any longer. So this is from Lightning Toaster, who's a regular, and I think they earned that pretty recently, so thanks for being active. A bit of context before I get into this. Less than 1%, this is us internally, right? I don't mind sharing this with you guys. Less than 1% of all the money that we make for TechLore to make this all possible, to spread the resources we do to be involved and also give privacy projects a platform and educate regular people about how to do this stuff. Less than 1% of people who watch what we do contribute anything. Like, it's that little. So less than 1 in 100 people, and actually it's a lot higher than that, never contribute, which is totally cool, right? Like, that's why there's sponsors, that's why there's ad revenue, that's why there's affiliate links, that's why I try to diversify things as much as possible, so that it's not put on one person. Or, not one person, but I mean, kind of, yes, like, it's not put on just one of you out there, but also it's not put on just one revenue model. When we ask, and I say we because I'm talking about other creators, I'm talking about other projects, I'm talking about surveillance support, I'm talking about Signal. When all these services are asking you guys to, like, support, it's normally because almost no one is, and they're trying to just get a few people to do it. And typically you do see a bump, but at the end of the day, it's just sometimes a little bit demoralizing, because if literally just 10% of the entire audience gave $1, it would actually outdo what's currently being done. So I'm using us as an example, and I'm not using this as a way to, like, ask for more. Like, I already do that, and again, we're pretty good, like, we have other revenue models, but open source projects, and here's where I'm getting to, they don't have that option. Open source projects don't typically have sponsors, they don't typically have ad revenue coming in, they don't normally have affiliate links built in. And anytime open source projects try to monetize via any of those avenues, there's a ton of backlash. But also, a lot of people aren't willing to put their money where their mouth is and actually contribute to make these projects possible. And a lot of these projects are running on budgets that are much lower than you probably think. And it's a little bit sad to see sometimes behind the scenes. And so, yeah, I just wanted to give that context before I get into this. And it's a difficult issue to deal with, but Lightning Toaster, I think, is a big part of the solution here. So, after many years of free writing, open source, and watching content creators without ads through private front ends, I've finally gone ahead and made a little spreadsheet of open source software and content creators I want to micro donate to, so that I can slowly get used to paying for the software I appreciate and use and directly support the creators I frequently watch. For the longest time, I felt intimidated by the concept of donating money on my own terms and having to decide how much I should donate. But after a Lewis Rossman video showing me how little ad money the creator actually gets from me, even if I were to watch every single ad, I discovered there's nothing wrong with micro-donating. I was also concerned with handing over sensitive data to PayPal, which is popular for fast donation, but I'm still working on that. I'm going to try alternative non-credit debit methods when possible. EU citizens like me who don't use debit cards, credit cards at all, feel like they're downgrading convenience too. We'll still look into upgrading my skills and using Cake Wallet for donating crypto to privacy content creators and Internet Archive. I'm a total noob, and since making that spreadsheet, I've already micro-donated to Kreedom, and Framasoft, who creates PeerTube, which I happen to be live streaming to now, right now. And I'm going to try my hardest to get some more people over there, so I'm going to keep saying that today. But awesome stuff, and I think I am really proud of Lightning Toaster for having this realization. And I'm also hoping that it serves as a message to anyone else. And so if the way I typically paint this is, you know, I try to keep this actionable and, like, easy to follow. There's a ton of, you guys probably use, like, at least 10 core services in your life. Like, you have a messenger, you have an email client, you have different browsers, you have different operating systems. And a lot of those might actually be open source, which is super cool. But if you're not contributing to any of them at any point in the year, and again, there's always this, like, preface of, like, if you can't support, if you genuinely can't, that's fine. Like, it doesn't mean you shouldn't use them. But if you have any means of support, pick one of those to support one time every few months. Like, it's not asking much. Like, literally quarterly, pick a service and give them $5. And you will be shocked how much of a difference that makes. So many of these services are running on budgets that are like $10,000 a year, and they have thousands of users. So if just a fraction of those users tip them $5 every few months, that would, like, make an astronomical difference to these services. So I really want to make it clear, like, kind of how crappy the situation is right now. And I think Lewis Rossman's video speaks to that, it seems like, and kind of made them realize that, even if it was from an ad revenue perspective. And it just doesn't take much to, like, significantly raise that bar. So yeah, if you're in a live chat, I'd love to hear any services that you guys are contributing to, and any, like, methods that you guys have found to kind of keep up with things. Typically the way I do it is I'll do, like, a monthly subscription to a service for a few months, and then I'll switch over to something else. So I did Signal for a long time. We contributed to the EFF and like Calyx and services through Techlore for like 3 or 4 years straight. And paused that temporarily right now. But right now I'm still trying to find the next service. So I'm actually all sing this and I paused these like a month ago. So I have yet to find like that next service. But that doesn't mean I'm not looking for the next one. So it's really just a matter of getting it set up, and it's on my list of Todo, my Todo of list of things to do. But yeah, I'd love to see this. Let's see. Like, I use a graph that says like my video. That's clever. Revcolo, I used to pay for Mint until I stopped using it. Yeah, and I mean, so here's the other thing too. I heard this from someone. Who was it? I think it was an open source developer, but pretty much the concept of using something, whether or not you should donate to it, shouldn't always apply. So we were talking about this in the context of content creation tools on Linux and open source and how they're just kind of objectively not as good as things like Adobe Premiere. Like if you compare KDE's video editor like to Adobe Premiere, it's just no comparison. If you compare GIMP to Photoshop, it really is no comparison. GIMP is good enough for doing basic things, but I don't think it's genuine to like actually compare it to a Photoshop alternative for actual professionals using Photoshop in an advanced way. And they said something that I think was really powerful, and I'd like to share that, which was these services are running on tiny budgets. And they like if they can't compete right now, which is true, like they struggle to compete against these massive counterparts that are popular and being used by professional industries, and they're charging their customers over $50 a month just for basic access to software, and GIMP charges nothing. What you can do, and something that's highly recommended, even if you're not using the service, contribute to the service you're not using yet, because it's never going to become the service you use unless it gets some more support to get better. And so if you are using Photoshop because you have to for work and it's in place of GIMP because GIMP isn't good enough for you yet, match that Photoshop donate or payment to GIMP if you can. Again, I know this can add up really quickly, so I'm not saying everybody should do this, but it's one avenue you can explore of like, oh, my company, we are paying X amount of money for Photoshop for all of our employees, and we have this extra funding, but we're going to put it towards GIMP because we want to see GIMP get better, and eventually it'll be perhaps just as good of an alternative to Photoshop. You can do whatever you want. Come up with a system. Maybe it's 10%, like 10% of what you put into your regular proprietary mainstream solution goes towards the open source alternative, even if you don't use it. So that's one other way of kind of looking at this, and that you don't need to use the services. It could be the service you want it to become, and you're kind of supporting the future of that happening, which you it's pretty cool. Like I think it's a pretty cool way of looking at it. Jeremy says, I support a few projects, small donations, but I'm doing something. RescueZilla and Wikipedia get monthly contributions. Pretty cool stuff. Let's see. Yeah, Wikipedia is a good one. I really like them. And I haven't really heard of RescueZilla before, so that's a new one I should look into. How would someone get Bitcoin Monero without an ID in the US? I'm a miner and I would like to get my hands on crypto. Even if I was 18, I'd prefer not to share my ID. Yeah, that's a tough one. So kind of the main ways that come to mind, you're going to have obviously like mining. You can mine something and then convert it to Monero or something. That's probably like one of the easiest, but it might take a long time. If you have a craft or something that you can do, like there's like XMR Bazaar right now, you might be able to post some work. Or if you can sell something, like you can sell tech to other people and get Monero back. You can probably ask your parents if they want to buy something like Bitcoin for you, and you can swap that into Monero. So those are kind of the main options if you're under 18 and you're trying to get your hands on Monero. Also go to Monero meetups if you can, assuming you know you have the means of doing that. But when you go to Monero meetups, you can typically find other people with Monero and give them cash for it. So person-to-person swap is always a pretty effective way. So those are the main methods I've seen at least. So I hope one of those helps, but it is just a challenge, and you could just be patient and wait till you're 18 and then do it yourself. And I know it's a bit of a wait, but it's not too far off. Let's see. Back in 2006, I pioneered the conversion of many friends' businesses from Internet Explorer to Firefox and got them to donate to keep the project alive. That's pretty cool. That's OG right there. Yeah, that's crazy. That was like 20 years ago. Let's see. I do need advice. So my family is not as privacy oriented as I am, and I'm struggling navigating how to continue. Yeah, I'll touch on that soon. Not gonna forget that. And I'm gonna go over to the forum first, and keep moving there, and I will get to your question. Let's see, Taserface. A very light week for me. Every couple of months, I install Fudo Keyboard to check its progress. Fudo has improved enough for me to ditch Hellebore and switch. Gesture typing seems to be as good as on Gboard. Long pressing offers the same functionality as a physical keyboard. The action bar now has its own toggle, so it can be hidden while the suggestion bar is visible, and the built-in voice typing is pretty bad. Installing the largest model didn't help. I continue to use the separate Fudo voice app, which I find to be very accurate with the latest margin or the largest model. As for the laptop, nothing improved for privacy or security. That's how these things go. Periods of change, and then one can relax and get things done. I've been working on neglected projects, such as more detailed backups and organizing my photos. My previous platform was a tablet, and doing big projects was a pain. A lot of good stuff here. People have been really liking Fudo. So if you're on Android and you're looking for a better Android app that better emulates Gboard, this has been a consistent thing coming up in each live stream each week, so check out Fudo. Seems like it's very popular with a lot of people in our community. And the laptop, I think, is such a thing. Like, and this is the way, and this is why I always say, like, privacy and security is a journey. Like, digital rights is a journey. Everything in life's a journey, right? Like, if you're trying to get healthy, you don't just get healthy and then stop. So it's like doing work, making changes. And the way I've been seeing this, actually, this is, I'm getting into life stuff now, but transitions happen in life. And life kind of sucks for a while. Like, this is acutely, and this is also broadly. Like, if you have a major life change, you get a new job, you're moving somewhere, it's always just super hard that first month. Like, you're still figuring out the rhythm, you're still trying to get into, you're trying to figure things out. Everything's 10 times more difficult than it needs to be. So your goal is just kind of survival at first, and getting through the transition and implementing the changes you need to. But then from there, things start out of nowhere calming down, and you kind of get it, and you finally get a grasp over everything. And then you can kind of get into the efficiency phase and just like kind of getting back to your old life and just reaping the benefits of the transition. And I'm saying this because I think this is what Taserface is speaking to, and it's something that I think is part of a very healthy privacy and security journey, which is ideally you're not doing something all the time. And what I mean by that is like you're not logging in each day and going, oh, hey, I'm gonna make this big switch today, and I'm just never gonna get my work done. Like, what's the point of having a well-optimized system if you're never actually doing anything on your system and you're just continuing to optimize it? And this is something I fall into all the time. I feel like when I'm procrastinating, instead of like figuring out, well, how do I actually use my time well? How do I make my time more efficient so I can get more done, even though I'm not really doing anything in the moment? So, I think it's really easy to also do this with privacy and security, which is I'm just gonna keep making myself more private, more secure. And you realize, well, you spent all this time hardening Signal, but did you ever think to send a message to someone or actually onboard someone to use Signal with? So I see this a lot in the community, and I think it's a very normal human reaction. I fall into it as well, but I think it's a really good moment for us to kind of look at this pattern, be okay with it, accept it, and just realize, okay, we're gonna go through changes, we're gonna take a weekend, we're gonna install some things, we're gonna have fun, and then we're gonna just die down a little bit, and we're just going to enjoy and reap the benefits of everything we've done. And then when we need to make more changes, it'll come up. Like, we'll know we need to make changes. You can always try to be a little bit more proactive, but I think you wanna try to find that middle ground of like being proactive, but not too proactive. And that is my weekly life advice, apparently. And I see Johnny O was awesome, and I thank you, Johnny. And I still can't get a response or a comment from you. One day I will. But that's super awesome, so I really appreciate it, and thank you so much. And Rovcalo, thanks for tuning in. But you can still watch the stream when you come back if you want to. But yeah, oh, we got Benjo. Of course, we got Johnny in here. Johnny, you got a question? Like anything? I'd love to answer it. let's see here. I'm gonna go ahead and keep moving through the stream. Let's see. Making sure, where is it milled? Okay. Frickin' Johnny's gonna come in each week and do this to me. I never know what to say. Okay, the privacy lurker. Technical wins. They decided to start from scratch and factory reset their devices and have now adjusted their setups according to the advantages of each OS instead of trying to replicate the same setup throughout different operating systems. Fedora and Android is for personal use with FOSS as a priority, and they treat their Linux as a retro gaming console that just happens to use Ephemeral Brave and Mulvad Browser for background content consumption. On Android, it's mainly for lazy content consumption, and they've decided to not log in unless it's a FOSS app they trust. And if they need a proprietary app, I'm not logging into. Aurora Store within a private space does a good job. Sometime they might look into Graphene OS. macOS and iOS, FOSS is less of a priority, and security is the main goal, and they consider macOS the communication and productivity hub. iOS is sort of an extension of their macOS setup for proprietary services, and they also have been helpful. This has all been helpful for digital minimalism, because when I see a certain environment, I know what I'm supposed to be doing, rather than getting distracted of the imperfections of each OS for the perfect privacy setup. So I want to pause right there. Really good things here so far. Every OS has benefits and cons, and as someone who I truly despise Windows. I had to use Windows for a few things I was playing around with. Funny enough, with the PeerTube server this week, I literally was just like, I was fuming. It was so obnoxious. Doing just basic commands in PowerShell was like ridiculous. It's just such an infuriating platform to me. And yet it's still the only platform that you can like do really solid gaming on. And you just can't deny that. That's a benefit to the platform. macOS has benefits. Linux has a lot of benefits, as I don't need to convince many of you here. But leaning into those benefits, into your workflow, and actually maximizing can sometimes really help you out and really make your privacy and security journey a lot more accessible and just enjoyable. And it doesn't normally sacrifice, and sometimes can improve your privacy and security. Now, I interviewed Jose Briones. Recently, and I actually asked him this question, and it speaks exactly to what you're saying here on the bottom. I asked him, it seems like there's two camps of people in the digital minimalism crowd. The first one is people who say, well, digital minimalism means as little as possible. So I'm going to get an iPad and do everything on my iPad, or I'm just going to have a laptop and a phone and that's it. The second bucket of people are actually kind of the opposite. They want a dedicated device for a ton of different use cases. And you think, how is that digital minimalism? Well, the concept of digital minimalism is about focus, and it's about dedication to a specific thing and reclaiming like your attention and being a lot more intentional with what you're doing. And it's a lot easier to do that if you have like an editing device or a gaming device or a communication device. And when you have those isolated things, you actually are implementing digital minimalism in a slightly different way. I think both camps are extremely valid. I happen to fall a little bit more in the first one, but I think I want to start leaning a little bit more into the second one, specifically for video editing. I've been noticing that it's been hard to edit videos and stay focused because, man, when you get into that flow of editing a video, you just become immersed in it, right? Like, that's kind of a flow state. And then sometimes you get a notification that goes through your filter, and then boom, like that just kind of throws off your flow. And so I think having a dedicated editing machine is one specific area where I could also have more of this like dedicated environment. So just something to think about. I think everybody has a different way of doing this, one of the two. So play around with it, and it seems like Taserface is definitely in that second camp. Now they have some social wins here. They used to take the controversial hot takes we see in deeper parts of the community as, that's a good way to put it. They take more a holistic approach now. You're valid if you want uBlock Origin with Firefox on your phone. The tracker blocking is unmatched. Even when these are technically correct, we need to keep in mind that even the researchers are still debating these amongst themselves. Privacy is situational and contextual, so I'll always ask, is this relevant to me, instead of buying into sensationalism, which is very mature of you. There's a lot of sensationalist takes out there that say things like, just as statements, they just say statements like Firefox is insecure, or this is bad, don't do this. And there's very, 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 very few absolutes in the community. So when you see things presented as absolutes and as broad avoids, it's a pretty big red flag that it doesn't mean any of the points are wrong. I would just analyze the points and try to see how those points apply to you, which is exactly what they're doing here. They don't know how they missed this when it was released, but they highly recommend checking out the tech lore threat modeling video. Thank you. Yes, I'm very proud of that one. And I feel like it's just a very different framework of looking at privacy. So if you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend it. It provides a good baseline for following along with a table chart. I'm not sure how this needs to be done, but this conversation about threat modeling has to improve. But because it's so unique and hyper-specific, it's really difficult to make it cookie cutter. Even two people within the same threat model could have vastly different approaches. So another huge thing here, and really big lessons today, I think. It's really easy to see a take for anything online. In fact, I could probably go right now and find you a take for why you should absolutely use Chrome for everything and why you should absolutely use Firefox for everything, Brave, Mulvad, Tor. I can do it. And when you realize the strategies that people kind of implement to make their point, it's almost manipulation in a way. When I'm making content, for example, behind the scenes, I'm always asking, what's the point of making this content? And a lot of times it's, well, to educate the person watching it and to help them find what works best for them. And so you'll rarely hear me say, this is why you need to use this all the time. It doesn't matter who you are, just get it, use it. I mean, I don't even do that with like sponsors. With sponsors, it's like, this could be a really good fit for you if you are this person. So I can't even imagine doing that in a sponsorship context, let alone in like an organic coverage context. But you actually see it a lot on the internet. A lot, you're gonna see a lot of like, this is why you should never use this because I have this issue with it, even though that issue doesn't apply to like a majority of people who would use the service. And so try to just remember that. I don't think people have bad intentions. I just think people see their own experiences as what everybody else's experience is going to be like. And that's just not reality. So I trust all of you to be better about that, but just a good reminder. And now they're beginning to normalize privacy. My best friend and I have an inside joke about password managers because I keep begging her to use one. I've got her onto the Proton suite, but she is using more so as a fallback in case Google and Apple no longer suit her needs. But the crazy part is she won't even use our password manager solutions either, so it drives me nuts. I was using Bitwarden extension creating an account, and it used an autofill to make a new password, and I took it as a moment to flex on her because she had to continually reset passwords every once in a while. She sent me a picture of a password management notebook she saw at a bookstore and said she'd consider getting it, which is based, not going to lie, and is better than nothing, but my concern there is her losing that thing. I think if you add Riz or humor around your privacy journey, people will be more inclined to pay attention, even if they don't take those steps themselves. Yeah. I think you said it well. I'm gonna leave it there. It's a good story and a good message. All right, I'm gonna break here and go ahead and check in on the comments here. See what you guys are up to. Again, Johnny O being wild. Okay, so Pison said, oh wait, I there was a question asked earlier. I didn't forget you, Joshy. I do need some advice, so my family is not as privacy oriented as I am. Oh, is it? Okay, it's back, it's back. All right. My family's not as privacy oriented as I am, and I'm struggling to navigate how to continue in my privacy journey if my family is against it. Yeah, so it's hard to know exactly what issue you're dealing with here, and what against it means. If they're against it in the sense that they're just not following along and they don't listen and they don't seem to care, I think that's not a terrible place to be. Not everyone's going to care as much as you do, and this is going to always be an issue with any kind of non-mainstream paths that you want to go down, especially when they have to do with like digital, human, animal rights, whatever they are. You're going to be following takes that aren't mainstream takes. And so in a way, you're following a more main, like you're not following a mainstream belief system or a value system that's really normalized beyond our niche. And so you have to understand, in a way, you're a bit ahead of the game. I think that as time goes on, more and more people are going to realize the insanity that is how unprivate everything is by default and how extensive those implications are. And so have some ownership in that and be okay with that and realize that they won't get it and they might never get it. But I think that realistically, the amount of people who are going to see this as a necessary, important thing is only going to go up. My point is, you're ahead of the times, I think, and being ahead of the times can be isolating. And that's just part of it. This isn't a privacy-specific thing. Anytime there was a huge movement, there was like trying to abolish slavery, right? It started as more of like a small thing, and it started as just a few people who were very ahead of the curve, and they were like, well, this doesn't seem right. We're not going to do this. And as time went on, the movement grew, and when we look back on it in history, we see, whoa, like those people were ahead of their time, and they were the reason this change happened. I don't think what's going on today is equivalent to the horrors of slavery back in the day, so that's not the point I'm trying to make here. The point I'm trying to make here is that when there's a cause that you care about and you're one of the first people to that cause, you're going to be isolated from the mainstream issues, if that makes sense. So I hope that can help you kind of change your framework around why you might feel isolated. And, my point is you don't need your family to be fully on board to still take this seriously for yourself. And you might have to compromise here and there on certain things, like you might not get them to signal. But it doesn't stop you from having multiple messengers and using Signal with other people who do want to take it seriously. And I think the more you just do it and the more you demonstrate that it's something important to you, I think the more they'll pay attention and they might even start engaging with more things. Don't force it. Be patient and trust the process. That's what I'd say. Benjo says, hey. Python says, relatable. I do that with all sorts, including spending hours modding a game to play it for 20 minutes. Yeah. And I think work, gaming, anything, Linux is a whole huge thing. I feel like it's one of the most common reasons I see people say they stopped using Linux. And frankly, myself included, I don't use Linux anywhere near as much as I used to. And it always comes back to like, well, I gotta like actually get shit done now. Like I actually gotta work. And it's not to say you can't get awesome work done on Linux, if not better. Like, I actually prefer Linux for certain work. But the tinkering, the constant, like, breakage, depending on your workflow and stuff like that, is just, it can really distract you. And so, going back to the whole digital minimalism concept of, like, using dedicated, focused environments, if Linux being super flexible and customizable and, like, a tinkering device prevents you from actually doing what you want to get done on the operating system, then maybe it's just not the best operating system for that use case. Like, it could be, right? But it might not be. And maybe Linux is like your personal tinkering device, and maybe you have to use a different work machine so you can actually be focused and get shit done. That's not everybody. I know some people are much better about it and they can just use Linux for everything, but it's not everybody. Yeah, oh my gosh, of course I just said it right after. I should have just gone to the next comment. Eventually, I realized I just want a working system. Yeah. I want to use a custom ROM, but I'm concerned with banking apps. Do you recommend custom ROMs? Yeah, I mean, custom ROMs are great. Just be aware of the limitations, which it sounds like you are, which is some apps won't work. We run a project called Plexus, plexus.techlore.tech, which will tell you like what banking apps work on completely degoogled ROMs as well as MicroG. And then for sandboxed ROMs with stuff like Graphene, I think they have their own compatibility chart. So that's maintained on their end. Otherwise, yeah, you gotta ask around and see if it works. And that's part of the cool thing about having a forum. So I would highly recommend the forum for that too, if you ever have a specific app that you wanna get more details on. No VPN questions for me today. What happened, man? What's going on? Are you good? Like, should I be checking in on you? F Windows. I don't understand why some coders use Windows. Yeah, really? I mean, I honestly think it's easier to do programming and coding in like WSL on Windows, like the Windows subsystem Linux, I think is what it stands for. Like, yeah, you're better off just using that than actual Windows. You should make a video on if you should move to countries based in EU due to privacy laws. Yeah, I don't think I could, in good faith, just make a video saying this is why you should move to these countries. I think if I was to do a video like that, it would be like, oh, I'm a little low. Here we go. I think if I were to make a video like that, it would come from a place of like, what are the top privacy respecting countries in the world? And that's actually a pretty interesting video. Like I might actually make that video. It's a good video idea. But it would never be in the context of like, you need to move, or like, here's why you should move to these countries solely for this reason. One, I think it's unrealistic and it's extremely ridiculous to say, yeah, like just go move to a country, a different country. But two, and this again comes back to some of the more extreme advice out there. It makes people feel like they need to do extreme things to reclaim privacy. And that's something I really, really, really try to avoid on the channel. And I see it all the time. People are like, well, if you're not using this tool, then like you're just like not even that private. So like why bother? And it's this defeatist, pessimistic view on things, and it really prevents new people to the space from feeling like they can do anything. So imagine someone like watches a Techlore video for the first time and they hear, okay, privacy is a journey. Like this is something that anyone can take small steps on, and here's how you get started, but here's what the like the long-term vision looks like too, and you can really grow with yourself and grow with the movement. Would you rather someone hears that, or would you rather them click a video and they hear, here's why you need to move countries, otherwise you're screwed, and here's like the countries you should move to? There's a lot of that second one, and I think there should be a lot more of the first one. I think that second one has a place, but right now I think the scales are too tipped. So I would really like to see more of the like approachable stuff, because we're not going to onboard noobs if we're doing the second one, because there's a few people who might relate to that message, but I think the majority of people are like, well, I'm not going to move countries for this. So if that's what it takes to be private, then I'm not going to take this whole movement seriously. So we want to be taken seriously, and that's a way to be taken more seriously. Is using Google Stock with privacy toggles any private? I'm just a guy looking for some privacy from big tech. Don't care about government surveillance. It's going to be really hard to accomplish too much on Android, like stock Android. You can use DNS filtering. You can obviously opt out of anything, log out of your Google account. Our Android hardening guide, like Android privacy and security guide, goes through a lot of those steps. And I literally just talked about this. I don't want people to feel like they have to be using a custom ROM to make substantial improvements to their privacy. A custom ROM will dramatically simplify a lot of things, because a custom ROM will just be de-Googled by default. It'll be just out of the box a lot more privacy respecting, and it'll probably have features that will make your journey a lot easier. But there's this huge friction point for a lot of people of actually getting to a custom ROM. A lot of people don't have compatible hardware, so they'd have to buy new hardware, they'd have to install it, they'd have to transfer their files. I mean, for a lot of people, just an operating system reinstall is kind of a huge deal and could break up their weekend. So I really recommend people check out custom ROMs because it makes their lives easier, but also know that there's a lot you can do before then as well. And that privacy and security guide I just talked about like goes through all those options. Should make a new and detailed video on threat modeling. Yeah, I think it's such a difficult concept to like talk about, and I haven't actually found like a new way to talk about it from the last threat modeling video, but I'll definitely keep it on the radar. And then let me go ahead and continue here. And I'll get back to more comments after we get through a few more here, because we're only seven in. So Wafer has been watching Privacy Wins for some time now, so I thought I would join in and share their story. They've already done easier things like adding 2FA to every account and using password managers, but right now I'm tackling larger issues like moving my entire 13 plus years of email from Gmail to Proton, or specifically changing my email ID to using aliases, moving photos from Google Photos to self-hosted solutions, and more. Big, big journey right there. So they're moving from Authy to Entei, and YubiKeys are already used in most accounts. They're already on a secure foundation for like their main software. They started using RSS more and removing email newsletters, and still on the lookout for a good cross-platform RSS reader. Please let me know. Yeah, cross-platform is going to be hard. You might find the best luck with something web-based, to be honest. I don't know of that many like good cross-platform stuff. So, hopefully someone has a rec as well. These larger moves are going to take a lot of time, but I've already closed accounts on a few services that I don't use and changed emails to aliases on some others. One step at a time. And for those who care, I wrote a post here. There's a lot of good info in this one, so I hope it helps. So, this was a good post. So, if you want to learn more about like keeping Windows usable, that was a good one. For RSS recommendations above, you have good recs for Readwise's reader alternative that's also cross-platform, even better. Reader is fantastic, but I'd like to check out any FOSS alternative. So yeah, It sounds like you're like earlier, I kind of talked about how you're going to have like these big transition moments and then you can kind of peace out for a while, then maybe small transitions and then boom, you have another big transition. Sounds like you're going through a big transition right now, and that's awesome. Enjoy your like time doing it. You don't do it often, like maybe one or two times a year. So enjoy the experience, and by the time you're done with it, you'll probably not want to do any more of that. But yeah, just keep it up. I'm cheering you on. And just hang in there because it really does. It can take a toll. Like a lot of these things can take a long time, like moving your photos and all this stuff. So I think you're doing a great job. Let's see here. Rithwick, they installed Fedora on their MacBook Pro and the experience has been smooth. They started using Rethink DNS, but they ran into an issue with KDE Connect. And thankfully, following a suggestion from Ale, I managed to resolve the problem. So, side note, I just love seeing when the forum helps you guys. Like, it feels good. It's like, okay, no, this is good. It's actually helping you guys. So, it felt good seeing this one. In an effort to minimize my footprint, I deleted their Discord and Snapchat accounts and minimized their use of Google Maps by switching to Magic Earth. I've heard a lot of good things about Magic Earth for people out there looking for a Google Maps alternative. It's also on iOS, I believe. I don't know, I can't confirm, but I think it's on iOS, so that's another option there as well. They also made a switch from Visual Studio Code to VS Codium, as VS Codium explicitly disables telemetry and tracking. They can also ensure no usage data or tracking information is sent back to Microsoft. So, awesome stuff there. And follow up, edited 3 days later, most of them in my contacts use Google Maps, and I had to frequently open Google Maps to share. To avoid this, I've created a simple website to convert Magic Earth links to Google Maps, even further reducing my use of Google Maps. Whoa, this is sick. Okay, also using GeoShare to convert Google Maps. Link to the website. Let's check it out. No. Oh, dude, that's so cool. Yeah, okay, so if any of you use Magic Earth, then this is kick ass, honestly. It's on GitHub too, it's open source. It's awesome. No, this is awesome. Yeah, definitely give some confetti in the live chat. Because this is super cool. Like this is someone who like solved the problem. They were like, yeah, I'm gonna solve this, I'm gonna make it easy for other people. And this is how you do it. So yeah, congrats. That's cool stuff, man. Rafkalo, I think you were in the live chat as well, if I remember. My win of the week is purely circumstantial and is based on this post on Mastodon. I followed the instructions and received this. It sounds like it's an opt-out for Meta to opt out of Meta's AI. So congrats. That's awesome. Let's see. Kinky Koala is a Techlorian. They've been active in the community for a long time, so it's super cool to see them leave a win. I think yeah, they said it's their first time here. So they're considering buying the Switch 2. They got lots of awesome childhood memories with the Nintendo 64. And I thought they might give Nintendo a try again. I saw their pricing strategy, then I made a huge U-turn. Considering that I often find the vibe of modern games I loved when I was a kid to be meh and often much more hectic than I enjoy, I leave the Switch 2 to the billionaires who can afford it. So I decided to give the Retroid Pocket 5, one of those retro gaming handhelds, a try. This wasn't purely a privacy choice, but when I think about it, it's got some huge pros. It's Android-based, so they can use things like Aurora and Proton. It can run custom OSs, which I didn't know, and Linux-based ones, and even Android Linux dual boot. They're not stuck with one greedy corporate capitalist brand. They can play all the games they own and love, nor at least less tracking, and no effin' microtransactions. That's a good one. And they've been playing around with Bato, I've never heard of these, Batocera, Betocera, and RetroArch before. They tried some emulators on both Android and iOS, but having a dedicated gaming device that runs smoothly, which I can connect to my guest Wi-Fi and even run offline after having it set up, is a huge win. Super cool. And I think I've seen some of these devices. They look really cool and they look really retro. And I love the design of them. So definitely a fun, like, side quest privacy win. Not traditional, but cool nonetheless, and definitely a first. So thanks for leaving it here. I joined a Canadian server on Lemmy yesterday. Cool. Reasons for the change: Reddit's an American company. Who knows how laws will change in that country? Too many people in the subreddits I follow posting questions that I've been asked a dozen times. No ads, ability to hide bots. Also, I might add Lemmy is federated, so you can engage with it from Mastodon, and it's open source. So those are some other reasons to use Lemmy as someone who doesn't use Lemmy. I also don't use Reddit, so it's not like I use Reddit instead. I just don't really use many of those platforms, and I have been using mostly forums at this point, like actual forums, which I don't know, Reddit doesn't feel like Reddit or forum software to me. A small nugget I found today that many of you might already know on Android, in location settings, you could and should disable the Wi-Fi search. Yes, and there is a somewhat similar thing on iOS as well. Even if you disable the main Wi-Fi on your phone, the location sub function will allow apps to search for Wi-Fi to get a more accurate position of your device. So, definitely a good tip. If you haven't already disabled this, make sure to do that. We're going to continue with Go Better, but I'm going to check in on the comments real quick. See what you guys are up to. The people are waking up. Let's see. Pretty sure 50, 60 years ago, we can make software like Matrix Linux popular as WhatsApp and another popular software. Yeah, interesting. Any thoughts on T-Mobile's T-Life app and its screen record they're doing? I don't know about this app. Generally speaking, I'm just not a fan of these cell companies because what they tend to do is they install just really invasive software on things like Android operating systems. So like Verizon, I know, installs their own Messenger. They install like a calling app. They install all this other crap on it. And all of it collects telemetry. None of it's normally implemented with like top-tier privacy and security standards. And you're almost always better off using like dedicated solutions that we know are more private and secure. So I would just be very cautious with anything that comes from a cell company, to be honest, including T-Mobile. YouTube also sent me a warning that it's not receiving enough video. So if you guys are seeing an issue, let me know. But it looks fine on my end, so I don't know why it's giving the error. Walter, welcome in. Welcome in. What do you think about the new QR sign-in feature with Proton Pass? I'm not a fan of it personally, but wanted to hear your thoughts. I don't see what the issue is. It should be like technically pretty much just as secure as using a password. And it's using the trust system of like, well, if you're logged in on one device, then it's a trusted device. And I'm guessing you don't have to use the QR code sign-in, if I'm not mistaken. And I also haven't used it, so I don't know what you're not a fan of. But if you're not a fan of it from a like security perspective, I would like to know why what your concern is. I don't tinker as much as I used to after 25 years of Linux. I mainly want the stability. So fair. Thanks for the advice, Henry, of course, yes. And thanks for mentioning website for research on custom ROM limitations. Yes. And products like best countries with privacy laws. Oh, I see. That's a good video as well. Those are both good videos. Like what countries have the best privacy laws to live in and what countries have the best privacy laws for services. So good question. Can I ask you two questions? No. No, I'm kidding. Should I tape over my webcam? And what should I do with pre-installed Google apps I can't uninstall? Yeah, so tape over the webcam. It's not the first thing I would recommend people do. There is zero harm in doing it. Literally, I can't give you a single reason why you shouldn't do it outside of maybe inconvenience. Like if you actually use your webcam, if you have to take it on and off, I could see how that could be frustrating. But it's very low on the list of things that I would be concerned about because a hacked webcam is implying a pretty serious issue, which is like your entire system has been taken over. And yes, like someone spying on your camera is probably like one of the big concerns if that happens, but you're probably not going to have that happen to you. And if you do the other basic advice, which is easier to do, and a lot more important, and it, you know, protects you from other attacks. Things like keeping your operating systems up to date, keeping your browsers up to date, using an ad blocker, like understanding what phishing is and what malware is. Those things are going to be a lot more important than taping up your webcam. So there's nothing wrong with doing the webcam thing. I just really don't like when I see people who have zero, they're not doing anything right, but they just do the webcam. So they skip all the important steps, do the webcam. But like, if you're like, think about this. A lot of those people, you know, keep all their information in their browser and they stay logged in permanently. So if someone took over their entire operating system, they're probably going to steal their credentials from their browser before they're spying on them through their webcam because they can just get their bank account information, right? Like, so think about priorities, think about the things people are going to go after, and think about the assumptions. Like, what is the assumption if this attack were to happen? It's like, wait, no. That requires a full operating system takeover for the most part. So what else would I have to be concerned about to even get there? And if I'm there, like, what are the other things that might happen before they're looking through my webcam? So think about the other stuff first. You can also do that as well. Hi, can I ask you two questions? The second one. What should I do with pre-installed Google apps I can't uninstall? You can disable some of them, which is pretty good. Obviously, log out when you can, opt out when you can. And there are some cool ADB commands you can run that I would look it up, like uninstall system apps with ADB. If you type that into your search engine, you should get some results. And they'll walk you through ways that you can sometimes remove those system apps via ADB. Just be aware it could cause some system instability because a lot of operating systems, like if you get like a phone from a company that has its own software on it, there could be dependencies on apps, and it could be hard to get those apps back without doing a full factory reinstall. So just be careful with that. What's your current take on Proton? Do you also feel like it's getting too corporate, or do you see them doing good at the moment? Do you think they'll get better or worse? Yeah, I mean, I feel like my views on companies is always evolving. They always have that corporate feel, which I'm never the biggest fan of. But it's also just a good service, right? Like they overall, it's like there's not a better place to recommend. There is no like, hey, you're all in on the Google suite. Here's an alternative. That's not Proton. Like, I just don't know what that option is right now. And I actually started like experimenting with third-party email clients like Thunderbird. Shit, even because we had to do a migration recently for another project I'm working on, and that migration just happened to be to a Workspace migration, which is, I have thoughts on that. But I started using Gmail, and I realized, holy crap, like I remember Gmail being a like I haven't used Gmail in the web in like probably like 10 years. Like literally, I just haven't used it in so long because even with this channel, I use a custom domain on this channel. I don't actually have Gmail for this channel. So I used it and I'm like, this kind of sucks. Like the settings, have you guys used the Gmail settings? Like it's awful. It's outdated. None of it is intuitive. Everything is scattered. The actual interface is okay, but it's actually a somewhat dated interface and it hasn't really changed much at all in the last 10 years. And it actually made me appreciate Proton's interface quite a bit more because I'm like, wow, I didn't actually realize that Proton in some ways feels more modern than Gmail. So my point is, I guess I gained a little bit of appreciation for Proton in the last few weeks because of that. But you know, all of that aside, I'm always conflicted. I am conflicted on most services and companies, especially when they get large and they have to prioritize things that don't always benefit the like smaller community directly. But yeah, I don't know if they're gonna get better or worse. I think they go through phases, just like every company does. Like Apple, I feel for is a great example of this. They'll go 3 years with nothing but issues and mistakes, and then they go through three years of just like awesome stuff. And then they release lockdown mode, they release advanced data protection, they start releasing all these alerts when people's phones get hacked. So they start, you know, releasing all these cool features. So, but then they go through another period of just suckiness. So my point is, I think companies go through phases of good and bad stuff. And I think right now Proton's in like a decent state, like they're not good or bad right now, relative to themselves, if that makes sense. So yeah, those are just my loose thoughts. I don't ever have like a definitive, like established take on like what they're doing right now. Sometimes they do things that make me mad though, and I can like talk about those things that make me mad, but not in like the broad context. I don't just have that ready to go. Fresh RSS. I've heard good things about Fresh RSS. So that is one recommendation to the person earlier who asked about RSS. Magic Earth is great. Magic Earth is on iOS as well. Thanks for confirming. Let's see. Thanks, Henry. Made me realize that privacy is a journey. Yes. One more. If one person gets it, then great. Give a like, guys. Yes. Thank you. Give a like. Do what Dang Loot has said. Have you tried Proton Drive's new albums feature? No, because I have exactly zero photos in Proton Drive because it's pretty bad for photo storage. So, I mean, I think it's crazy they launched it without albums, to be honest. But it's good they finally got it. And yeah, so my short answer is no, I haven't tried it. India's privacy policies aren't great. India's been doing a lot of really sketchy stuff recently, and I would just be following. If you're using any services that are based out of India, I would, especially encrypted ones, I'd have backups ready because that could get ugly fast, I think. How can I use a different VPN and DNS at the same time on Android? So Android has a custom DNS feature just built in that should work independently of your VPN. So you could use like Mullvad with the custom DNS option. And I believe it uses, man, I'm blanking, DNFs over TLS, if you want like the protocol that it uses. But if you use something like a Rethink DNS, actually that'll probably do a better job. And it's more feature rich than even that. So check out Rethink. I think it's probably what you're looking for. I'd prefer Google Maps because 100% Google in this era is a very huge disadvantage. Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. I think Google Maps is a really hard one to replace. Do you use Tor browser to order Pringle chips? No, I have never ordered Pringle chips online. That is only something I've ever bought in a store. And I think that's probably most people listening to this podcast right now. Stream. Thoughts on Zen. Okay. I have more updated thoughts on Zen, actually. Oh, before I do that, there's a comment here from Alex, a Techlorien Signal Group. One of the problems of such QR code logins is that it is pretty easy to push not so advanced people. Fish. This is done a lot on Discord, and as far as I remember, this is also a problem on Signal, since the Russian military, yes, hijacked the QR code login. Yeah, definitely a good point. Phishing is definitely always going to be a concern. So yeah, I guess if you are more concerned about phishing and you don't have the assurance that it is a trustworthy login, then feel free to just do the manual login, because QR codes do pose some interesting challenges. So that is a very good point, and it's something I definitely missed earlier, and I think it's a good thing to think about. So thanks for bringing that up. What are your thoughts on Zen? So I recently talked about how I've been starting to use Zen, and the use case that I found for Zen is I have like a bajillion things to check every day, for Tech Lore, for Cake Wallet, for my personal life, and it's like, you got to check three of the same account. And if you fall behind on one of those in a day, then you have to put in twice the amount of work the next day. So the amount of communication I have to keep up with is too much. And I was using Brave profiles for this. So I had like a Techlore Brave profile, I had a Cake Wallet Brave profile, etc. And each of those had a progressive web app. So I essentially like just opened a web app for each thing and use that to check, do my daily checks is what I call them. But it's really messy. It's cluttery. There's all these windows that open. And so Zen's essential tab feature actually was kind of perfect for this because I could pin tabs that are tied to specific Firefox containers. So like Patreon, I could have the surveillance support Patreon and the TechLore Patreon as buttons. And I literally just click one by one. And then when I get to the end, then I did my daily checks. I close the browser window and I'm done. And it's so much more efficient, so much cleaner. And Zen's whole like workflow with that is awesome. However, Zen has updated their browser to only max out at 12 essential tabs. And I might add, there was no UI feedback on this. So I already had like 17 tabs and I tried adding another one and it just doesn't add. So I went on their GitHub and there was an open issue over this. And I also reported that it was an issue for me. And then someone from the Zen browser team just said, "This is expected behavior. We're capping it at 12 now." No further explanation. Other people are like, "Well, why?" And I didn't even say why. I just went in and I said, "Well, I hope you understand that when you don't have UI feedback, you're gonna have people like me opening GitHub issues over this." So it also was really buggy when I was using it. At first launch, it felt really great, but the more I used the Zen browser, the more I stumbled on bugs and issues. So my updated thoughts are it's not ready for prime time. And I question a little bit of its use case. Because I actually tried vertical tabs on Firefox, and I was able to essentially emulate that with Firefox now. So if Firefox getting vertical tabs does kill a good amount of the reasons to use Zen browser, in my opinion, there are still some exclusive features on Zen, but that's been my experience. Those are my updated thoughts. So still a cool project, still gonna be following it. It's still installed in my system, but I actually haven't opened it in a while because now I just migrated to Firefox for that use case. Maybe you can scratch the webcam. Oh God. If the best hackers cover the webcams, you should too. No more reason needed. I don't agree with that reasoning. I just don't. Like, the best hackers are also like far more targeted and they have a lot bigger threats. But that doesn't mean that applies to you. That's like saying, oh, Shaquille O'Neal lifts 500 pounds a day and eats 12 eggs and, shoots 100 hoops. Therefore, if I want to get into basketball, that's what I need to do. No explanation needed. And that's just not how it is. Like, they're in a different part of the journey than you are, and they have different threats than you do. So while I agree it speaks to how it is a real problem people should be thinking about, it doesn't mean that's what you need to do. And again, people like Zuckerberg, a lot of people like speak to Zuckerberg using this stuff, and CEOs. Guys, CEOs are like some of the most targeted people out there. And it's the kind of thing too where like the kind of attacks that they would do against a hacked CEO is like literally ransom. They'd be like, hey, I have this video of you doing something embarrassing. Give me money. So for them, it's a much more real concern. And the default isn't to do that for regular people. For regular people, they're trying to steal your bank credentials. They're trying to steal your cookie sessions. Like, they're doing more basic things to just more directly steal money because most people aren't like targets. So just a little more context there. So it's not to say that you shouldn't consider this because obviously the best people are doing it. It's just keep in mind the likelihood of it happening to you. And there are more important things to do first for people who are new to the space. How can you still use Google services, mainly YouTube and Maps, while minimizing the data you pass on to Google? Okay, I'm gonna get to that after we go through a few more of the wins. So Go Better. This week, I made my technically first contribution to an open source project. I planned to do it, but later it was just on my radar. But I saw one library that would be great to add to the project on my job, but it was lacking stuff. The library, unfortunately, is not stable enough, but I'm happy anyway. So good stuff. That's another way to contribute to open source, is just directly contributing. He also visited the Hitchhiker's Guide suggested by Batcher Dink and installed a privacy redirect. LibDirect is even better. I'm amazed on how many amazing front ends and instances for popular websites there are, and are generally faster, take less bandwidth. Love it. Yes. So if you guys haven't like been exposed to this yet, there are private front ends. Front ends essentially allow you to access the information without needing to have an account. So there's Reddit front ends, there's Twitter front ends, there's front ends for TikTok even. I think it's called StikTok. And it's actually from Sean O'Brien, who I'm friends with. And there should be an interview with him eventually. Like, I recorded it, but it's gonna have to be produced. My point is, these front ends are really awesome and they allow you to access services typically via an open source web wrapper. It's more privacy respecting, and a lot of times they might bypass things like VPN restrictions as well. So, these services, privacy redirects, if let's say you type in Twitter, and you put that in your Omnibar, it'll automatically take you to a privacy version of it, which is a front end. So check these out if you want to. I think you can even integrate these into uBlock Origin, if I'm not mistaken. And so it's a cool little way to actually engage with things a little more privately. And it's especially useful if you're someone who uses Tor or a VPN that gets blocked on these platforms like Reddit, because then when someone sends you a link, it'll automatically open the link in an area that you can actually view the content people are sending you. So, pro tip. So this person switched to Lineage. The build is unofficial and fairly recent, but it works. I don't use any Google services and switched to false alternatives. I've been using Linux on my laptop for a while, and I like it much more than Windows. Anyway, I pretty much de-Googled. So, congrats. That's a big deal. So, I hope that like that phone continues to work well for you. I'm gonna go through my wins now, because I have wins. I am a human as well. So first, this is a win. I am streaming as I speak to PeerTube, and it looks like it's still going. And it's showing 11 views, which is pretty awesome. So I don't know if those are live or not. I don't know the PeerTube. I've never seen it before, but this whole live stream has been going to PeerTube. So check it out on Techler.tv. The solution I was looking for was actually embarrassingly simple. To get it to work while still being behind Cloudflare. So, yeah, very, very easy solution. I also got Techler Clips on Techler.tv, so check that out. And Surveillance Report Clips is there as well, but the thumbnails haven't been updated. So, check that all out, because I'm pretty happy about it. Now, I didn't put this in here yet, but I have another win. So, I have a very interesting win here. It might not be a win, but it's a change in my workflow. I stopped using a global VPN. Whoa, what? What? So, on my desktop. I'm playing with this. So this is an experiment, trying it out. But I'm going to give you my reasoning. So when I, this is again very personal preference. When I reflect on why, I was reflecting on why I use a VPN. And actually, full disclosure, I was having issues with like certain programs that I couldn't do split tunneling for. And when I did split tunneling, the other issues would come up. And essentially, like there's just certain programs that just don't do well with a VPN. And I'm sure all of you experience this. There's probably one system program you run that like doesn't let you log in when you use a VPN, or it's just noticeably slower. Insert your reason, but I know not all of you have a perfect VPN experience where everything is fine. Maybe you are and you're a unicorn, but that's just not what I see. And same thing on mobile. On mobile, banking apps, for example, like they might not let you log in at all, or maybe they ask for additional verification each time you want to log in if you have a VPN on. So anyway, where I'm going with this is I reflected on why I use a VPN and in what situations I want the protection, because it's not in every situation. And it really comes down to just generic web browsing for me. It's like when I'm just accessing websites, I don't want my IP address to be an easy way to link my web activity to different websites. And I also appreciate being able to quickly change locations and be able to essentially be in another country when I access a website. Both of those things I never need done for local apps and programs for the most part. For the most part, those local apps and programs, A, either are trusted solutions that are open source and I have full faith in, and the VPN doesn't add or reduce any of the protection. Or B, it's a service that doesn't let me log in with a VPN anyway, like a banking app. Or C, it's a banking app and it's directly tied to me. And there is no pseudo anonymity or anonymity you're gaining by using a VPN anyway. So it's kind of just wasted effort. So those are my, that was kind of the reasoning I went through, and I kind of processed it and I go, okay, well, what's going to give me the protection I want in a web browser without as many drawbacks? So I actually am just testing out using the Proton VPN proxy extension in my browsers with no system-wide VPN. And I'm not gonna lie, it's been really nice. Like, my upload speeds are twice as good. It's far more efficient to navigate. Like, I never have like my VPN just randomly disconnecting when I'm doing something, and then all the internet cuts out on my machine, and I have to troubleshoot that, and it takes me away from my work. Like, all of my local programs just work super well. Things are just, they feel more responsive too. Like, when I send a message on Signal for desktop, beforehand, there would be like a, you send and then boom, it sends, but now it's just boom, send. Like it's instant. It's like an instant send. So things feel snappier, things are snappier, upload speeds are better. And then when I reflect on the protection I'm getting, it's actually fundamentally the same on web browsers. Like when you're actually accessing these websites, it's almost exactly the same as the VPN with like slightly less fingerprinting resistance, like slightly less. And that's why I still have Tor Browser on my system anyway. So that's been kind of a small journey update. I don't know if it's a win yet, but I wanted to share this along. And maybe that workflow will resonate with some of you out there, because I realized that most likely for a lot of people out there, the web browser is 90%, if not more, of where you're going to get a benefit from a VPN. And most of the issues you're going to get with your VPN are actually going to be with local programs. And this is the last thing, adding site exclusions. Not many VPNs have site exclusions, right? Like you can say, oh, Reddit always blocks my VPN. So I'm going to add Reddit as like something that's never going to go through a VPN tunnel. That's really hard to do system-wide. But with Proton VPN's proxy extension, you can literally go into the settings and just like, let's say you access reddit.com and it's like your IP address is blocked. You can literally just add it as a site exclusion and then you're done. You just refresh the page and you're still connected on every other site to the proxy slash VPN connection. And the proxy has SSL, so it's still encrypted. Your ISP still can't see stuff that you're doing with that connected. So it's literally giving you almost all the benefits of a VPN with far fewer drawbacks even. So that's my journey. If you guys have questions about it, I'd love to answer and expand on more reasoning if you are curious. And it might not stick. So that's always kind of what I say. Like I'm always experimenting back here and trying different things and re-reflecting on my workflow and seeing how I can make things better. And that is my win. And then let me go back to the comments. And then I think we're gonna do one more bounce of comments, and then I'm gonna just finish out the wins all in one go. And then I'll do one more comment. So that's the that's the workflow for the rest. So comments, we're going to go through the rest of these wins and then one final bout of comments. So if you want to go ahead and start leaving kind of your questions so we can kind of start prepping for the final phase out, I would definitely do that. Let's see. How can you still use Google services like YouTube and Maps while minimizing the data you pass on to Google? I'd say it's all about compartmentalization, right? Like, it's a YouTube account that you use for just public-facing things. It's a Google Maps account. Like, disable, obviously, everything you can within the Google suite. Like, they have a ton of privacy settings you can turn on / off that can help you out. But also compartmentalize. Like, Google Maps, like, keep it on a different Google account if you can. Maybe it's the same one as your YouTube account. Try to keep it, if you're on Android, like in a work profile, minimize the data that you give it, just do your best. You also have the web app as well, if you're able to get away with just the web app, but just minimizing your usage as much as possible, and being okay with probably not being perfect about that. And then continually trying alternatives. And you can also use Magic Earth. Like, maybe it's like, try it Magic Earth first, see if it works for you. And if it doesn't, then try Google Maps as a backup alternative. So there's a lot of spectrum here that you can explore. The future of privacy is cooked as people move on and use more AI and get less technical, and they'll stop looking for FOSS and other privacy software. Yeah, I think there's a lot of things to be concerned about, but if we just think it's cooked, then it will be cooked. Like, we are going to not make it possible. So we need to have some optimism if we actually want to have hope that there's a future here. So yeah, you just have to be optimistic if you ever want things to get better. That's just always how it is. What kind of Linux just works? I keep distro hopping because some distros don't support my GPU at all. Some just have random issues and none just work. What is your suggestion? I would say that's a very familiar and common complaint with Linux. Everyone's going to say different things here. I'm going to come forward. It's not my go-to distro. It's not my favorite distro. It's not a distro I like by default recommend to everybody. I think Ubuntu is probably your best bet. It is the closest thing to just like a like out of the box, most probably has like some of the most hardware support out there. You don't have to really play around with it. You don't have to tinker. You really can use Ubuntu mostly just out of the box. And there's a lot of stuff that they've integrated through a GUI as well. I don't love saying it, but I think it's true. And I'm not saying this to defend Canonical. There's a lot of concerns with using Ubuntu, but if you want Linux that just works, I do think Ubuntu is kind of the closest you're going to get to that right now. Hello, fellow bedheads. Yes, I got mine right now too. I woke up here and I just got up and I went to, like, I'm running on like 2 to 3 hours of sleep right now. So it's a time right now with work. Interesting info about QR phishing. Would it be then possible that when you log in with a secondary device, you could be hacked with a single QR approval? It's possible depending on the implementation and how the attack is pulled off. But that's the concern, of course. Can you give quick tips to hide from big tech and government? Kind of no. I mean, that's a big ask. It's a big request. Use a password manager. Keep your stuff up to date. Opt out when you can. Use a browser with an ad blocker. Those are like very quick get started places. And also have an end-to-end encrypted messenger. You're not going to hide. That's not like how to hide, but that's a very good start that everybody should be doing. Morning, Henry. Good morning. I'm doing my best. I hope you guys are too. Is PeerTube an app I can get Henry, or is it something I can only get on a computer? Okay, so PeerTube is federated. Oh, I never switched over to the comments thing. One second. Sorry about that. PeerTube is federated. This is like asking about email. This is actually a really good analogy, I think. Is email an app I can get, or is it something I can only get on a computer? So when you think of Gmail, you can just log into Gmail and use Gmail in your web browser, and that's the web app. That's the official web app. You can also log into your Google account on like your iOS device or your macOS device or your Android device, and it'll sync with your local mail client, so Apple Mail, iOS Mail, whatever the hell they call it. You can also use a third-party client like Thunderbird and log in via that. PeerTube is exactly the same way. They're both federated technologies. So with PeerTube, you can just go to our PeerTube instance, techlore.tv. It's in the web. You can access it there. There's other PeerTube instances, though. So like TILVids, Aperta Tube. Like, you can go to these other PeerTube instances and still watch our videos from those instances because they're federated and they speak to each other. So that's number two. But there's a lot of, I'm not too familiar with them. I know there's NewPipe on Android, and NewPipe allows you to use PeerTube. But there's probably desktop clients as well that use PeerTube. I haven't used them, but I know they exist. So my point is, you have tons of options. So there isn't just one way to do it. Phone inspection at entry of countries. Yeah, that's a bigger concern now. If you hand over physical access to your device, it's, I don't want to doom and just say you're done, but I think if you're truly concerned about this, you're going to have to do backups, like cloud backups, and just factory reset your device, and then like restore them when you're in and out of wherever you're trying to go. I think that's kind of the only way to do it right now that I can think of, because they can force you to just unlock the phone unless you want a lot of problems. How should I open potentially unsafe links? Should I use a website screenshotting service and or disabling JavaScript, or should I make virtual machines? There's no correct solution, and I think you're getting at the main options, right? Like, you can have different tool sets, and you can pick the one that's your favorite. You can have a browser that you just know has better security and has better site isolation, and so that's your browser you use to open concerning links. You can have a virtual machine that is probably the safest way to go. And those are the two main options. You can also have dedicated devices if you're like really strict about this stuff, which I know some people behind the scenes who are that strict about it. Like, if they get links, they'll manually type out the link on a dedicated device that they know really can't be hacked, like something like a Chromebook or an iPad or something like that. So that's kind of the general advice I have. There's no like one solution, but you've kind of touched on the multiple options. So find the one that works best for you, and I'd say you can't go wrong with it. And then Northern Chimp said PeerTube on Linux Pipeline, for example. Cool. So there's one client for you to check out. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and keep moving through the wins. We're going to finish out the wins, and I am on a time crunch, so I'm going to do my best to get through these, but still give them proper attention, I hope. Let's see here. Kit set up Tailscale to use services hosted on their desktop on their other devices. Also a Tailscale user. It's phenomenal. They set up Open Web UI, they switched from Manjaro to Fedora, they started convincing more people to use Signal, they started contributing to an open source project, and they're starting to discuss privacy and moral concerns, and they're using MetroList, and they set up Cake Wallet. Awesome. Love all of those. Those are all huge wins. Losses. SpotTube, they got a cease and desist, their music player. Fedora has an issue with pointer lock that they weren't able to fix. Oh, they were somewhat able to fix. Steam has been buggy. They play some Steam games. So keep messing with those. Hopefully you can slowly eliminate those as being losses, I hope. And then they're asking a question here. Is there a particularly good local DNS service to replace an IP localhost with a port with a custom URL? When I go to a local AI, it loads imaginary IP, which I'm still loading to your computer. That's a more technical one. I'd have to think over that more. So I don't know, but hopefully someone in the forum knows. And if they didn't answer it, I'd suggest opening a dedicated forum post, because that way people can more appropriately help you. Is there Techler merch? There used to be, and this is one of those things. This I said at the very beginning of this live stream. I get requests for a lot of things, and it makes me feel like they're popular and that people will actually use them. And merch is one of those things. Like, the amount of times I was asked for merch way back in the day, I was like, okay, yeah, seems like no-brainer. I'll set up merch. I set up merch, and almost no one bought anything, which is fine. Like, the reason why I did it wasn't to make money. It was to, like, give you guys something that you guys were asking for, but no one was actually getting it. And I asked for feedback. People were like, well, yeah, it's cool merch. I just don't really want to get it. And it's like, well. So there is no merch right now. If you guys overwhelmingly ask for it and convince me that it's good to have, then perhaps I'll do it again. But it's not something I plan to do. I also feel weird about doing like physical stuff. Like, it feels a little bit wasteful, and people already have enough clothing. And I feel like it's contributing to fast fashion. So like, ethically, I also feel weird about it. But those are just my loose thoughts. Fun things, they try to use Optanium for as many apps as possible. It's a great app. If you're not using Optanium, check it out on Android. It's a really cool way to get software. They use Molly instead of Signal, which offers so many useful features, and it's more privacy friendly. And then they're using Orbot to help people access Tor without running the whole device through it. Super cool stuff. I mean, honestly, this is a really good comment. So good job, Kit. And those are all really good wins. We got some people giving some FDroid client recommendations. I got the virtual democracy I am in to allow laws to be written in Proton docs and for it to advertise itself in Mastodon. Super cool. Name is Julia if anyone's interested. Cool. No, good win. Good win. We have a bronze Techlorien here. Really cool stuff. You can also become a Techlorien. Brems Strahlung. They fully moved to a Pixel 8a with Graphene OS. Now the iPhone can stay home and be a secondary phone, which is pretty cool. Good workflow. So now they have no Google or Microsoft accounts and an Apple account on a switched off iPhone. No Uber, no Spotify, but yes, dependent on Microsoft for DuckDuckGo. I agree, but you're using DuckDuckGo. Your intention is not to use Microsoft, and I don't think you should discount that. Google for the Pixel and on Apple for a MacBook. Being aware that even for enhanced privacy and still dependent on big tech does keep me grounded. Stay humble. Compartmentalization. Two work sims, both in the iPhone turned off. One secret sim just for banking used on the Pixel, and a work WhatsApp account on the Pixel isolated and turned off after work hours. Pretty cool stuff. So good job. The trial and error with the Pixel took some effort. Being able to buy phones just for privacy compartmentalization is quite a privilege, really. It is, and I wish that was talked about more. Graphene specifically, if you use it, great. But I think the hardware requirements is like a thing that like not everyone can do. And I think that's why it's so cool that we have different ROM options as well. Calyx has a lot more device options than Graphene. So if you can't, and you're in a country even that doesn't ship Pixels, which is most countries around the world, you still have some other device options. And if Calyx doesn't do it, there's still Lineage. So all these ROMs have different options. And that's actually the way I've structured it in our resources on our website. In our resources, you'll see there's a tag for like limited device compatibility, moderate, and extensive. And that's kind of a way to hopefully cater to like multiple people and devices they may or may not have. Let's see. Gurujo bought a flash drive and installed Ventoy with multiple distros, which is probably a cool way to play with things. They also found out it seems gacha gamers and Linux nerds are coming together and they use a specific Grub theme because of this. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know there was Ventoy themes actually. Because Ventoy is kind of not beautiful out of the box, but all software is beautiful. Am I right? Speaking of previous flash drives, that one was a puny 16 gig, brr, and not enough to store it. So that was replaced with Tails. So did you upgrade to a larger one? Finally, my friend has accepted the idea of trying Linux for 30 days with one of the old laptops, and we'll do this every 2 weeks. We shift between Linux Mint and Fedora, and he'll decide from there after the fact the daily drive, which is nice. I'll soon be documenting this in my blog with ground rules to be set. Pretty cool stuff, similar to LTT. Stay tuned. With that said, he did tell me he's changed how frequently. Yeah, no, good stuff. And definitely a good challenge as well. It's a good way to test things and like probably gain more appreciation for your current workflow is probably the takeaway that's gonna happen here. That's my theory. My hypothesis of what's going to happen. Speaking of Linux, I just set up Linux on my Android tablet and now acts as like a light productivity machine. Really cool. Yeah, no, that's a good way to do it. Let's see. Got my mom to use Proton Drive for backups. And yes, we already use Signal for communication. She also has WhatsApp for my sister. A harm reduction, to say the least. I still don't trust someone like my sister would have encrypted backups, but would surprise me if so. And even then, don't trust a person with a potentially company monitored phone. Unfortunately, Viber forces unencrypted Google Drive backups, which is a nightmare, and why I will never chat in this one. Yeah, good stuff. Switched full time between Brave, DuckDuckGo, and Startpage, mostly because Ecosia now requires an account for the whole new seed system, and I personally don't like that. It's really fair. And they switched Uncle from using Todo to using Tuda Calendar. It's not the same way, it's more like a similar way, but I do like that Tuda keeps it consistent with both UI, UX, and notifications in a way they're now encrypted, which is nice. Proton doesn't keep UI consistent. Cool stuff. No, a lot of big wins, and it seems like every week you've been having a ton of wins. So you've been moving at a rapid speed. So good stuff, man. Let's see. My first big win is that I've been able to set up a VPN exit node on my home network. Now I can connect with one VPN to my home network, access my self-hosted services, and all my internet traffic goes through the Proton exit node. The benefit is that I can use this on my phone where I can't use two VPN services. Yes. You can emulate this with Tailscale, and you can use a device as an exit node, and it's super cool. And I actually set this up with my NAS for a while, but it was pretty slow, so I stopped doing it. But it's a really good workflow. Second big win is the purchase of Home Assistant voice device, which is like, what is it? Like, you got to tell us what it is. Like, I don't know of one that exists, because there used to be Mycroft, and they shut down. So we'd love to know. Third big one is setting up their own DNS sinkhole. That's a good one. One big shame for me is owning LG TV. Now I can finally block all the traffic from the TV that I do not approve. Huge wins, really good stuff, and it seems like most of them are very networking related, with the exception of the Home Assistant. So good stuff, man. So Internet Ghost has been using the WhatsApp status update feature, which they say is a big win because it's end-to-end encrypted. They only get sent to people in their contacts. You can set up a blacklist and whitelist to control who gets to see which updates, and they disappear after 24 hours. So it's a really good way to repurpose it. And they do mention Signal's implementation is even more private, but it seems like a cool way to keep people updated with minimal information. And then we got Taser Face. Taser Face, I think that's your third win. Dad's used Lenovo T480, arrived today from Amazon. Within an hour, I had Fedora Workstation on it for Dad. He's retiring his Chromebook, but keeping his Google account for now. His chief motivation is every time he turns on the Chromebook, he gets a pop-up about enabling the AI, and he's terrified of it. Not my win, but still a win. Also, oh my God, it's not showing all the confetti. I'm gonna move this over, and I'm gonna drive everyone crazy. There's so much confetti going on. But great job, Taser Face. You had a really good week. I mean, I think you left three different wins. So that is it for the week. I would highly recommend joining next week's. It's already live, and someone's already been posting to it 4 minutes ago. And go ahead and join it. And also, as you can see, we're on PeerTube. So I hope you guys are tuning into the PeerTube live stream as well. And now, let's finish out. Let's see what we're up to. Start leaving your final things. I'm probably going to try to log off here in the next like 5 to 10 minutes. So start leaving any of your final wins, questions, comments, personal questions if you want. Let's see here. Is this skipping around? No. Wow. Okay. I haven't heard of Port app. Port is a messaging application with a strong emphasis on privacy. Limits the use of phone numbers. Yeah, I've never heard of it, so I can look into it, but I don't know about anything right now. Where can I find Signal communities? Yeah, so I don't know if you're asking generally or ours. Ours is like private only, so you have to join, you have to become a Techlorian. That's either through Patreon or our forum. The reason is A, like it's a perk, so like we can actually incentivize people, and I want to have perks ready for people, and it's accessible on even the lowest tier. So it's kind of a way to say like thank you for contributing to the podcast, and tech lore and all our video content and the forum, etc. But also there's no moderation really on Signal. So if you have a public Signal group, it's probably gonna have a lot of spam issues, and it's gonna be really hard to moderate unless it's not very popular. But with the popularity that we have, if I had a public Signal group, it would be impossible to moderate. So yes, that is just generally a Signal issue in general, is that you're probably going to only find smaller communities public. Like I know Naomi Brockwell, I think, also has a private Signal group, but she does the same model that we do, which is I think it's only for her patrons or whatever her like membership program is. And that's probably the main way to do it. Otherwise, there is no like discovery feature, so you kind of just have to see the communities you're a part of and see if they have a Signal group. That's kind of it. It'd be cool if Signal had a discovery feature, though, but I think it'd be really hard to do that privately, and that's probably why they don't do it. Does the CGNAT system ISPs use to deal with the lack of IP addresses help with anonymity, as lots of their customers will be sharing an IP address? I'm not super familiar with this. It's a great question, but I'm not familiar enough with it to be able to really comment if it would weaken the use case. I'm just basing it off the assumptions you're making, which I can't confirm, right? But like, let's say you're more likely to share an IP address with other people. The questions I'd be asking is how many people? VPNs, you might be sharing an IP address with thousands of people with who are all coming from different locations. Whereas with this, you know, it's all using the same residential ISP, perhaps all from the same area. So you might still be targeted for a general location. It might be with a lot less users, so you might be sharing an IP with 50 people instead of 1,000. I just don't know. These are the questions I'd be asking and digging into more, just to kind of get a better idea of what's going on there. How do I make a Signal account without a phone number tied to it? I don't want all my contacts to be notified that I joined Signal. Yeah, so first off, Signal is not picky with phone numbers. So if you use a MyPseudo number, it'll take it. If you use a Google Voice number, it'll take it. So you can use any secondary number. But I do believe now, and I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this. I think because they released usernames when you set up Signal for the first time, I think they allow you to customize whether or not you use phone number and/or username for discovery. And if you use username for discovery, I don't think your contacts will get notified. But these are a ton of assumptions I'm making right now, live in real time. And so I would not just trust my word on this, and I would investigate and research after the fact before you actually set it up, if this is a valid concern for you. So just something I'll leave you with. But I'm pretty sure there is a way to now bypass this. I finally bought the Proton Suite. I also set up searching locally. Good job. Yeah, searching is honestly a pretty fun one, I think, to self-host. So that's good. And it's, yeah, so congrats. Any other YouTube channel recommendations? Yeah, I mean, actually, if you go to techlore.tv, here, I'll show you this. I try to showcase them. So if you go to techlore.tv, even on the PeerTube side of things, you'll see featured channels here. Like I really do try to, oh my God, that made my screen capture tool freak out. I try to recommend things when I can. On YouTube, you'll see that the official channel is subscribed to other channels. And it's a lot of these channels, and it's channels that I just enjoy, and I think they're doing good stuff. You can also go to techlore.tech/resources, and on the bottom, there's external resources that also include a lot of cool people. So yeah, that's my best recommendation. See what we got. Home Assistant Voice is an open source. Got it. So that is the name of it. Thank you. I haven't heard of them before. Let me see. Home Assistant Voice. Let's check it out. Oh, you're so right. Thank you. That makes it so much clearer, because I'm like, they should have said what it's called. Here it is. If you want to check it out, it's called Home Assistant Voice. Looks like they updated it even as early as this month. It is in a preview edition, it seems like, but it looks like this is something you can buy. I don't know why I haven't heard of this, but it looks pretty solid. Definitely a great concept, and it seems affordable. Yeah, pretty cool stuff. On paper, it looks awesome. But this is my first time hearing about it, so I don't know how well it works. How do I not have a phone number tied to my Signal account at all? I don't see why it would be required for a messaging app like Signal. Well, it's required for mostly spam purposes. Like, it's frankly one of the easiest ways. Well, there's two reasons that I've seen Signal cite, and I think they're both equally true. One, it's spam. It's a very easy way to regulate the network and prevent people from abusing the network. Phone numbers are a little bit harder to get access to. And if you look at things like Matrix, I think you'll see how bad the problem can get with spam. And the reason why, people are always like, man, I get so much spam on Matrix, but I don't get as much on Signal. And it's like, well, yeah, because Signal requires phone numbers, and phone numbers are a lot more expensive to like spoof on a large scale basis. So, yeah, that's number one. Number two, it's supposed to be usable to the regular person. It's supposed to emulate SMS. And that is like good, actually. Like with SimpleX, for example, you have to like use this like really bizarre, unique like system, and you have to somehow exchange that with someone, and it's totally foreign, and most people would be very confused, and it makes onboarding much harder. Signal, on the other hand, is essentially trying to onboard as many people as possible. So when you use a phone number, and this is literally how I tell people to use Signal, if I'm messaging someone and like I have a phone number, I say, hey, like message me on Signal. And theoretically, they know to just download the app and just add my phone number, and we start messaging there. There's no other context needed. And if you have a username now, you just send them a username and they add you there, and then you're good. Adding someone on SimpleX is like so much more involved than that, and even Session. So my point is, like, onboarding is a huge deal for them. And phone numbers, for better or for worse, are like the most powerful thing for networking. So Signal does do. I do find this obnoxious for the record, but I get why they do it. The whole thing of like, they can see, like, if you add your phone number and you share your contacts with Signal, then it does do it all privately, but it also can like ping your contacts and be like, hey, you're all on Signal. And it really builds the networking effect. So one of the reasons why Signal is so much more popular is because of the fact that it has a phone number. So with that all said, I do wish there was a way to have all these benefits of Signal without the phone number requirement. But that's not really the approach they've taken. But fortunately, there's tons of other options if you don't like that for whatever reason. There's SimpleX, there's Session, there's Briar, there's Threema. So there's other options out there if it's an issue. But I fully understand and I fully get behind the reasons why Signal uses a phone number, even if sometimes it's a little frustrating. I do think it's what makes Signal the experience that it currently is, which is the most usable and overall best, accessible end-to-end encrypted messenger out there, in my view. So, and I have no reason to back them up. Like, I also wish the phone number requirement was dropped, but I also know that if the phone number requirement was dropped, Signal would just not be the same platform. And yes, abusers can make a ton of VoIP numbers, but think about the amount, the cost required to do that, compared to the cost of just like generating new accounts. Like, de-incentivizing that is a huge important thing, and having a unique identifier to say, well, this hash of a phone number is causing this problem, so we can like remove that. It's important. Jaden, I enjoyed the last interview you dropped on the channel. When is the next one coming out? Yeah, so I'm sitting on honestly some gold mines right now. Sadly, I don't have timelines because I am in the middle of a lot of projects at the moment. And there's just so much to edit, but let me list out some of the cool ones. I want to build the hype still. I would hope to have one out in the next couple weeks, the next one. But we have Buskill. I did the it's the Deadman Switch. I interviewed the guy who's behind it. I interviewed Jose Briones, Nextcloud CEO Frank, Nova Custom, Redact, their CEO, Sean O'Brien, Session, the Session, Key Jeffries, and the first ever VPN interview with IVPN. So they're all really good, I'm not gonna lie. And I want to see them live as much as you do, because they're good, and I think they're people are gonna really enjoy them. But they're coming soon, so yeah. Really busy back here doing my best. But that's it. So I'm going to start phasing this out. I want to thank everyone, as always, for making this possible. The people that make this possible are Techlorians. You guys are contributing to this. You guys make this possible. You guys make it happen. You allow me to be able to consistently rely on this for like just so much, and it brings me a lot of value. And you also allow me to be independent, which is just something I'm always grateful for. I want to thank all of you. Gosh, stop spamming the chat. Like, so obnoxious. It's not a place to spam projects. So I also want to thank viewers, all of you here who engaged and left your questions, left your wins, and continue to spread the positivity, which I think is very much needed in the space and allows all of you to like actually share your journeys and realize how much of a journey it is. And we're seeing all the familiar names come back each week with updates to their last week's workflow, things that might not be going well, things that are starting to go better, new things they're trying, new things they're tinkering with. And I think that's just really powerful. And I think that it can really extend, and we can try to apply this to other people in our lives as well on a local level. And you can take this to other communities you're a part of if you're in communities that aren't ours. So just want to give a major thank you for even being here. I want to give a major thank you for everyone who actually left their wins on the forum. That can be you. So if you're listening, it's open source and you can be a part of that as well. So check it out, all in the description. Thank you all again for tuning in.